Welcome in, podcast listeners. This is Outkick the Coverage. If you love the show, we didn't put any of the Game of Thrones discussion in this particular podcast. It's in the best of. But in this podcast, we got Alex Marvez. Lots of talk about the Flyers and the Yankees and their decision to pull the Kate Smith statue, and discussion of the NBA and NHL as well as the NFL draft. That's the Outkick podcast. Again, Game of Thrones, all in the best of. So download that one too if you like it as well. This is Outkick the Coverage. Hope you enjoy the Monday edition of the podcast.
Outkick the Coverage with Clay Travis, live every weekday morning from 6 to 9 a.m. Eastern, 3 to 6 a.m. Pacific on Fox Sports Radio. Find your local station for Outkick the Coverage at foxsportsradio.com or stream us live every morning on the iHeartRadio app by searching FSR.
Now let's get this party started.
You're listening to Fox Sports Radio.
Live from the Geico Outkick Studios. I hope all of you are having a fantastic Monday. The NFL draft is almost here. Finally entered the week of the NFL draft happening in my hometown here of Nashville. Excited to get rolling. Also welcome everybody in for what should be a good show. On Thursday, giving you a little bit of a roadmap here. On Thursday, we're doing a special primetime edition of Outkick from 6 to 7 p.m. Central, 7 to 8 p.m. Eastern. You can watch the final hour before the draft or listen to the final hour with us. That will be live in Nashville in the area outside of the Titans Stadium. They have a big village of some sort, I'm told, that's going to be set up. You can't miss us. We'll have a big Fox Sports Radio staging area. And then as soon as I am finished, the draft will begin. Jay Glazer, Joel Klatt, Rob Stone and Chris Spielman will all come together. So if you're going to be out and about and you're going to be listening to the draft and want to keep up with it, because you're not going to be in front of a television, you'll be able to hear all that with Fox Sports Radio. But that is going to be in a few days. Just want to give you a roadmap of where we're headed there. I'm excited for that. Should be a lot of fun. Cannot wait to get rolling. In the meantime, we had a loaded activity of weekend events. I want to dive into the NBA and the NHL playoffs. Also, reminder, in hour two, we'll be reacting to episode two of Game of Thrones, season eight. There are only four episodes now remaining. Hour two of the Monday edition of the show, we talk about the biggest event in the world of entertainment other than the Super Bowl and the NFC and the AFC championship game. But we began diving into the NBA and the NHL playoffs. I got a bunch of opinions on this, and then I'm going to go off on the Philadelphia Flyers for their response to a controversy. If you haven't heard about it, get your popcorn. But let's start here. Yesterday, during the events, effectively, the Celtics go out, and Brad Stevens in the playoffs and the Celtics in the playoffs. I know that the Pacers did not play very well in the final few minutes of each of these games, but even still, the Celtics get the sweep, get two in a row on the road in Indiana, and they are done, all right? So the Pacers are finished. The Victor Oladipo injury, I think they have to be pretty pleased in general, the Pacers do, with the way they responded to it and the fact that they made the playoffs even without him. But the Celtics get the sweep. They are on into the next round, probably to play the Milwaukee Bucks. But almost every NBA series is effectively over now in the first round. Let me run through them for you. Yesterday, Warriors effectively put the Clippers officially away. They are now up 3-1 in this series. We'll finish off the Clippers. I would be stunned if it doesn't happen on Wednesday. They've had a lot of rest built into this first round series. It's almost like the NBA schedulers knew the Warriors were going to take care of business, and they tried to go ahead and stretch out their series as much as they possibly could, because they will not play Game 5 in this series until Wednesday. But you can assume, I think, pretty easily that the Warriors are going to get the Clippers in Game 5. They're up 3-1. The Raptors went on the road, had a close win in Game 3, but dominated the Magic in Game 4. That series is effectively over as well. The Raptors now up 3-1. And the Trailblazers, and I'm going to get to Russell Westbrook here in a second, but the Trailblazers went on the road in Oklahoma City and beat the Thunder to go up 3-1. Portland has not had a lot of success in the postseason beyond the first round of the playoffs in a long time. But Lillard and company get the win on the road against Oklahoma City. There are now three games left in this series. Two of them will take place in Portland. Interesting fact, and again, I'm going to dive back into Russell Westbrook in a moment. But since Kevin Durant left, Russell Westbrook has gone into the postseason three times now. He has won, I'm doing the math live on the air, so this is always a little bit of a danger. He has won four games, and he has lost 11 in the first round of the NBA postseason. I think that Russell Westbrook is probably the most overrated player in the entirety of the NBA when you look at what happens when the postseason arrives. He vanishes by and large. 11-4, other teams have gone against the Oklahoma City Thunder. Everybody said, oh, Russell Westbrook needs a sidekick. He's got Paul George. Doesn't really matter. The Oklahoma City Thunder are basically unable to win a playoff series since Kevin Durant has left. Meanwhile, Durant is likely to win his third straight title with the Golden State Warriors. And Russell Westbrook, third straight year, he's not going to advance out of the first round. So those are the games that happened yesterday in the NBA. The games that are still to come, effectively the series are over. The Milwaukee Bucks tonight, around a 13-point favorite over the Detroit Pistons. That series is over. And the Rockets went on the road. I told you I thought it was a surprise that the Jazz were the favorite in Game 3. James Harden was awful from the floor. But still, the Rockets found a way to get it done against the Jazz in Game 3. They are up 3-0, and we're headed towards what I think is going to be the default NBA Finals, which is the Houston Rockets going up against the Golden State Warriors in the semifinals of the Western Conference. That is pretty much it. We've got now also, by the way, the Nets and 76ers series. A lot of bad blood there. That series effectively over. The end result is we only have one series that looks like it's going to go any length of time at all, and that's Spurs-Nuggets, where both teams are tied up at 2-2, and it feels like that series can go any direction. That is the only one in the first round, I believe, of the NBA playoffs that is going to be worth paying attention to down the stretch, and that may well be the only series that is left. The NHL playoffs are the exact opposite. For everybody out there who's been paying attention to the NHL playoffs, it feels like, other than the two sweeps we got, which were huge upsets, it feels like everything is still out there in the first round of the NHL playoffs. We got Game 6 going on between the Caps and the Hurricanes tonight. The Preds and the Stars, Game 6. Opportunity for the Stars to pull off yet another upset in the first round of the NHL playoffs, or for the Preds to force a Game 7. Then we got a Game 7 in Boston between the Maple Leafs and the Bruins. We got a Game 7 in San Jose between the Golden Knights and the San Jose Sharks. And we have got potentially two more Game 7s, depending on what happens between the Stars, Predators, and the Hurricanes and the Capitals. So going to be a lot of fun as we come down the stretch of the NHL playoffs. Much to discuss there. But I think that Russell Westbrook, more than anybody else in any of these playoffs, either NBA or NHL, has made himself look like an absolute fool in the way that he has responded to the media. He's making himself look small at a time when players try to make themselves look big. Petty, a really bad look for Russell Westbrook after games. They're now down 3-1, probably going to get eliminated in Portland. And I think it's hard for anybody to respect Russell Westbrook when he's behaving like this. Here's Friday's press conference after the Golden State Warriors got their only win of the series. This is what it sounded like.
Barry Trammell with the Oklahoma. And Russell, first half, both teams struggled offensively. It was sort of a slug of a game. Both teams got going in the second half. What happened that sort of reversed the tone of this game?
Next question.
Yeah, Russ, the fourth quarter, you got a 15-point lead. They catch up. what happened the last 6, 7, 8 minutes that reversed the momentum and let you guys burst back away?
Kerry Yeager's Portland Tribune. Paul, why did you dunk there at the end of the game?
Next question.
This is a really bad look for the NBA and for Russell Westbrook and Paul George here. I think the NBA should come out and fine them an inordinate amount of money to stop this from happening. Look, contractually, you are obligated to talk to the media after the game. If you think that a media figure is asking an unfair question, then you can say, hey, I think that's an unfair question. I'm not going to choose to answer it, right? That's your right. But contractually, you are obligated to respond to questions from the media. You may not like it. You may not like that part of your job. But I don't see how anybody can listen to Russell Westbrook there and Paul George and think these are guys that that I want to root for. This is an opportunity for you, if you are an NBA player, to explain your rationale in a game. Are there oftentimes insanely stupid questions that are asked? Yes, there are. But it's your contractual obligation. I do a ton of liners for this show, for example. Danny G can tell you, we get questions. I probably have done liners for every $1,000 contest that exists all over the nation. Anytime somebody's given away $1,000, I will read a tease for it. I don't think that's a good part of my job. I don't enjoy reading $1,000 teases, but it's part of my job, and I do it. Every single person that is listening to us out there right now has parts of their job that they don't like, but they are obligated to do them as a part of their job. Sitting and answering questions of the media is a contractual obligation of NBA players. You should have to do it, and if you don't do it, you should get fined. Period. Now, some people get all triggered by this, and they're like, well, they have a right not to answer questions. Sure they do. And then they have a right to get fined for not answering questions and for looking like petulant children after the game. I'll tell you, I didn't have that strong of an opinion about Russell Westbrook at all outside of his basketball performance until the past couple of years when his behavior has become so pathetic that I find myself rooting against him in a substantial way. I don't like Russell Westbrook. I don't like the way really that he plays on the court that much. I think he is a prima donna showboat who can't show up in real moments in games. The whole rocking the baby move, the amount of talk that he does. Did you watch Friday night's game when he drains a three to put Oklahoma City up and he's talking all the trash that he can possibly imagine? And then when he gets beaten down like he has done the last 3 years, 11 losses, 4 wins when it actually gets to the NBA postseason. He didn't score a point for the final, I think it was 26 minutes of yesterday's game, last night's game. This guy vanishes. He shrinks in the moment. And then when people want to ask him questions about why he shrinks in the moment, he vanishes again. I find Russell Westbrook to be thoroughly unlikable in the childlike behavior that he has at the end of games. Now, if NBA players hate responding to questions from the media after the game, then you know what they could do? They could, in theory, get in their NBA Players Association deal the fact that they don't have any obligation to respond to questions after the games. But this is your opportunity to talk to a large audience. This is your opportunity to directly respond after the game to things that took place. And if you don't want to answer those questions, then you should get fined a ton of money. I really believe that, because that's part of your job, a substantial part of your job. We come back, I'll bring in the crew, see if they agree with me. I'm also going to tee off on the Philadelphia Flyers. This is Outkick the Coverage on Fox Sports Radio.
This is Outkick the Coverage with Clay Travis.
Hiring used to be hard. Multiple job sites, stacks of resumes, a confusing review process. But today, hiring can be easy, and you only have to go to one place to get it done, ZipRecruiter.com/Clay. ZipRecruiter sends your job to over 100 of the web's leading job boards, but they don't stop there. With their powerful matching technology, ZipRecruiter scans thousands of resumes to find people with the right experience and invites them to apply to your job. As applications come in, ZipRecruiter analyzes each one and spotlights the top candidates so you never miss a great match. And they're so effective that 4 out of 5 employers who post on ZipRecruiter get a quality candidate through the site within the first day. And right now, my listeners can try ZipRecruiter for free at this exclusive web address, ZipRecruiter.com/clay. That's ZipRecruiter.com/CLAY, ZipRecruiter.com/clay. Make sure you make the smartest way to hire. That's ZipRecruiter.com/clay. Welcome back, Geico Outkick Studios. It's all right, I'm fired up about this. If you follow me on Twitter, at Clay Travis, you might have seen me writing or talking about this over the weekend, but one of the issues I have with society in general now, this is a big issue, is we are perpetually treating people in 2019, no matter what era they lived in, based on the morality of 2019. In other words, I'll give you an example. Of somebody that I think is held in very high esteem by almost everybody listening to this show right now. Martin Luther King in the 1950s said that he believed being gay was a psychological problem that was a huge sin. And if you were gay, you needed to try to heal yourself from being gay. I think most people who are listening to this right now would say, yeah, that's kind of what I would expect for Martin Luther King to say in the 1950s. Doesn't mean that he's an awful homophobe who you can't listen to in other arenas of his life. It means that even Martin Luther King, who was in many ways way ahead of society in his beliefs about racial equality, was behind society of where we are in 2019 when it came to equal rights for gay people. And that Martin Luther King's answers to questions about gay people in the 1950s, if he said them in the 2019s, would be very disqualifying of him of being a national figure. Yet, I don't think there's anybody out there who would say, oh, we've got to tear down every statue of Martin Luther King. We have to do away with MLK Day because his opinions on gay marriage didn't square with ours in 2019. He was a homophobe based on 2019 standards as it comes to sexuality. That's 1,000,000,000% true based on his own words. But I think most of you out there would say, okay, well, we can't judge MLK in 2019 with our standards today and hold him accountable for what he thought in the 1950s because he was a product of his times. Okay? That should be what rational adults believe when it comes to trying to hold historical figures accountable for our modern day opinions and expect them to have the same opinions as us in their era, which was entirely different. I bring this up for this reason. I'm not a huge, but you know, national anthem singer. I'm not a huge God Bless America person. If you listen to this show regularly, I think it's a little bit strange that we play patriotic music before pro sports games. It's my opinion. I think flyovers are a little bit strange. I think that pro sports is entertainment, and that if you are going to play entertainment events, much like I think it would be strange if they played the national anthem before Spider-Man in a movie theater, I think it's a little bit strange that we have the national anthem before pro sporting events in general. College is a little bit different because oftentimes you got state institutions, the state is involved, all those different things. I can kind of see it a little bit more. But for-profit events, I think it's a little bit strange that we do the national anthem or God Bless America. But I also understand that I am in the minority with that opinion. And most people who go to sporting events like the national anthem and God Bless America, whatnot, playing during and before those events. And one team that has really loved God Bless America has been the Philadelphia Flyers, NHL team, City of Philadelphia. And they have had a interesting and tumultuous history on the ice since they won their last Stanley Cup in 1975. But when they won that Stanley Cup in 1975, as often happens, there was a kind of a quirk of fate that turned into a part of Flyer lore. A woman named Kate Smith was famous for singing God Bless America in the 1930s, and the Philadelphia Flyers started to play her rendition of God Bless America in their arena, and something crazy happened. When they played God Bless America, they won, they found, at an insanely high rate relative to other games. And eventually, the Kate Smith God Bless America rendition became a part of their tradition, including Kate Smith herself, who was a large, 5'10", 250-pound woman, showed up and started singing God Bless America before big games for the Flyers. And when they won the Stanley Cup, this relationship between the Flyers and Kate Smith grew and grew, and they put up a statue to her in the parking lot outside the stadium. This large woman, it's a, kind of a funny-looking statue of her singing God Bless America. And they started to say, fans did, it doesn't start until the fat lady sings. And so if you were a Flyers fan, you might well know this story, as there are many stories associated with teams that become legendary, a little bit mythic, and maybe even a little bit silly over the way we consider stories like these, which are grounded in not wanting to forget your past, and also just that everybody has their own little different superstitions that occur during a sporting event, and one big one for the Flyers was Kate Smith. And the Yankees as well also would use, they've been doing God Bless America for a while, I think since 9/11 in Yankee Stadium, they would use Kate Smith's rendition of God Bless America because it's one of the most famous and most powerful in the history of that song. So, here's what happens. Somebody decides, Kate Smith died in 1986. She was one of the most legendary fundraisers during World War II to fight Adolf Hitler. She raised $600 million in World War II, the World War II era, and traveled over 500,000 miles to entertain troops during World War II. In 1982, Ronald Reagan gave her the National Medal of Honor. She died in 1986. She has been dead for whatever the math is there, I believe 33 years. So this woman has been dead for 33 years. National Medal of Honor from Ronald Reagan. She raised $600 million to fight Adolf Hitler. She traveled over 500,000 miles to entertain and support the troops who were fighting the Nazis. That $600 million that she raised, by the way, billions of dollars in 2019. Of all of the people out there who fought against the Nazis from an entertainment perspective by raising money, she was the height. When she died in 1986, the New York Times wrote this about her. No single show business figure even approached her as a seller of war bonds. In one 18-hour stint on the radio, she sold $107 million worth of war bonds, which were used by the United States government to finance the war effort. Her total for a series of marathon broadcasts, over $600 million. $600 million, a lot of money, no matter when you're talking about that amount of money. But if you put the $600 million that she raised over $11 billion in our modern day time, when you take into account inflation, to fight Adolf Hitler and help beat the Nazis. Over $11 billion, that's billion with a B, dollars. Over the course of her career, she did a ton to fight against the greatest evil that existed during her life. Well, what happened? Over the past couple of weeks, somebody has decided that they are offended by Kate Smith singing God Bless America because in the 1930s, she recorded somebody else's song, which was a satire about race relations in America that had what is quote unquote offensive lyrics in it. Now, it wasn't her song. She was under contract and forced to do all sorts of different radio obligations and musical obligations. And somebody decided, hey, these lyrics from the 1930s offend me today, even though, again, this was satire, which means it was ridiculing the type of songs and cultural standards that existed in the 1930s. And even though black men sang the same song that she did, and again, it wasn't her song, she just sang it. It isn't available anywhere because it's from the 1930s. And a couple of people got triggered and emailed the Yankees and the Philadelphia Flyers and said, we are offended by some of the lyrics that this woman has sung nearly 90 years ago. This woman who has been dead 33 years. This is unacceptable, and we believe that that you should not play her song anymore. And on top of that, this statue that is in the parking lot in Philadelphia, it needs to be taken down because we are offended by it. This is real life. I can't believe it. The Philadelphia Flyers yesterday released a statement where they said, we are going to take down her statue and we will never play her music again. This is one of the most ridiculous things I have ever seen a team do. They first covered up her statue. They then took down the statue of her and stripped the playing of God Bless America, the Flyers, and the Yankees. The standard that the Flyers seem to be applying here is this. If anybody at any point in time has ever been offended by any lyric that has ever existed by any artist, then we cannot have any association with that person anymore. If this is the standard, have the Flyers ever looked at the lyrics of the rap music they actually play today? Have they looked at the lyrics of every rock song that they play today? Have they examined every single act, both personal and private, of every single artist that they feature in their arena on a night-to-night basis today? Because guess what? There's a lot of homophobia in rock and rap lyrics. There's a lot of misogynism in rock and rap lyrics. There's a lot of sexism. There's a lot of racism in many popular rap songs today. These are songs and lyrics that they actually play in the arena today. Am I crazy for thinking that the Philadelphia Flyers and the New York Yankees are Pussy Willow franchises that should have just said, you know what? We love this lady's rendition of God Bless America. We can't speak for everything she did in her personal life, but they gave her a stamp. In addition to getting the Presidential Medal of Honor and raising $11 billion to beat the Nazis, they gave her a stamp to honor her before, soon after she died. She was the voice that beat Hitler. That was how she was known in her time in the 1940s. I can't speak to every possible belief that this woman had in the 1930s and the 1920s and the 1940s, but I can say when push came to shove and her generation was confronted with the greatest evil to ever exist in the modern era of life, she did everything in her power to oppose Adolf Hitler and the Nazis, and yet raising $11 billion to beat actual Nazis was not woke enough for Kate Smith to be able to sing God Bless America in 2019. It wasn't even woke enough for her statue, which has been up for decades in Philadelphia, to remain up. I'm sorry, but we have lost our way in this country. And sports should be leading us to the promised land, and instead, it's leading us into stupidity. Everyone affiliated with the Yankees and the Flyers who made this decision should be ashamed of themselves. Everyone is so afraid of being attacked by a social media mob that all it takes is a couple of losers sending an email for organizations to lose their mind. What's happened to common sense? What's happened to being reasonable in this country? What's happened with judging people based on the totality of their life's work as opposed to one individual detail in it? We have lost all nuance. We've lost all reasonableness. And crazily, almost nobody but me is even going to speak out about this because you know what? They're afraid of getting targeted by the mob too. I say, come at me, bro. I welcome you. Attack me all you want. Guess what? I ain't hiding. I ain't running. Somebody's got to be sane in this society, even if everybody else is turning into a bunch of running and hiding pussy willows. Your boy ain't doing it. I ain't playing it. We'll open up the phone lines. We'll give you guys a chance to react. 877-996-6369. When we come back, your calls.
This is Outkick the Coverage with Clay Travis.
Welcome back, Geico Outkick Studios. Some people out there would say, okay, why do you defend Kate Smith? Why do you care? There's other people who sing God Bless America. They can play God Bless America by somebody else. My position on this is because of the precedent it sets. We are setting one disastrous precedent after another, in my opinion, in the way we are holding historical figures to the standards that exist in an era they didn't live in. You can't hold historic figures, whoever they are, to the standards of acceptable behavior that we have in 2019 because they didn't grow up in our era. And that's why I started off using MLK as an example. Martin Luther King's opinions on gay rights and gay marriage and being gay in general would be considered incredibly offensive in 2019. He would not be able to be a political figure and have the opinions that he had about gay rights in the 1950s. But if Martin Luther King were alive today, he would likely have very different opinions on that issue. So I'm not going to hold him to the standard of what's considered to be appropriate behavior in 2019 when he died in 1968. Similarly, I'm not going to hold a woman who sang lyrics that were actually in a satirical song making fun of racism in the 1930s to the same standards that would exist in 2019 because she wasn't alive here. And the fact that people don't understand that and that teams like the Yankees and the Flyers won't just say that. Look, here's an easy answer. Some people are offended by Kate Smith's past. We don't agree with everything that she did in her personal life, but we find her connection to the Flyers and the Yankees through her beautiful rendition of God Bless America to be something that the vast majority of our fans support, and we plan on continuing to play it. Boom, the story goes away. Instead, teams and players and coaches and owners see this response and the precedent has been set. You have to take this kind of action when a couple of malcontent losers are upset. Let me take some of your calls. Who should I go to first, Danny G?
Let's go to the VIP line. We have Jim in St. Louis.
Jim in St. Louis. What's up, Jim?
Good morning, Clay. My blood is boiling, as I told your boy that answered the phones. I was thinking about the fact about the precedent. I thought about that, and then you said it. How far are we going to go? She is a war hero.
Yes.
She's a hero against of World War II. Are we going to go out to the memorial out in D.C. and take them all down? Because 95% of the men who served didn't have the right attitude about today's views of all these things. It is absolutely ridiculous.
I don't give a damn about the Flyers, but I hold the Yankees in high esteem. I'm a gigantic baseball fan, Cardinals, Yankees. I damn the organization for doing this. And, man, I am enraged. We got to, like you said, we are off the rails with this crap. We got to bring it back real quick here.
Thank you. Look, there's an interesting study Pew Research did. It found that 80%, 79%, I think, overall, of people of all races and ethnicities in this country find political correctness to be a horror inflicted upon our society. That is, the woke universe out there, which is a tiny, tiny percentage of people, is universally repudiated by most of the nation. And I feel like reasonable people need to start standing up and making our voices heard, because the unreasonable among us are driving our society off a cliff. There's a couple of the statements here that I thought were wild. This is from a recent Pew Research study. And again, I think reasonable people get overlooked, and we're going and allowing the unreasonable to drive our national discourse. Among the general population, this is a study by the Pew Research Group last year, a full 80% believe that, quote, political correctness is a problem in our country. Even young people are uncomfortable with it, including 74% ages 24 to 29 and 79% of people under the age of 24. This is also by race. Whites, 79% of them are even, and this is interesting, 79% of white people believe political correctness is a problem, 82% of Asians, 87% of Hispanics, 88% of American Indians, and 75% of black people. In an age when everybody says you can't get 75% or more of people to agree on anything, almost everybody, white, black, Asian, Hispanic, and Native American, agree that political correctness is out of control in this country. And yet we continue to allow people who are insane to dictate our national policy. It's nonsensical to me. Dub, who's up next?
We got Jose in Fremont.
Jose in Fremont, what's up?
What's up, brother? Hey, I'm totally with you. Check this out, man. A lot of these people, this is turning into a dictatorship in this country, man. And it's turning where you can't even speak your mind anymore without repercussions, even though these people don't even realize that. Let's just, for example, a lot of other companies, they want to go and nitpick things. There's a lot of companies that were involved in the Holocaust that we use every day today. So are these clowns going to go stop buying Adidas products? Are these clowns going to stop buying Volkswagen cars?
Yeah, no, it's a great point. There were a lot of companies out there that supported Germany during World War II. We're not demanding those companies be burned down. Hell, the Yankees didn't allow a black player till 1955. Should they burn everybody who played for the Yankees before the 1955s? Probably some racist there. The Philadelphia Flyers didn't have a black player till 1975. Should we burn down the entire organization? Your calls when we continue on OutKick here, Fox Sports Radio.
Be sure to catch live editions of OutKick, the coverage with Clay Travis, weekdays at 6 a.m. Eastern, 3 a.m. Pacific on Fox Sports Radio and the iHeartRadio app.
Live from the Geico OutKick studios, I'm fired up. You can probably hear it in my voice over this Philadelphia Flyer, New York Yankee decision as it relates to Kate Smith and as it relates to the decision to tear down a statue of a woman because you decide you don't like the lyrics to a song that she sang in the 1930s, nearly 100 years ago, 33 years after she died. This is really our standard in the world of sports. See, what upsets me about sports is I think sports should be the unifying force in our society. I think it should be the place where everybody comes together and we all are able to enjoy and appreciate sports regardless of whatever else our differences. Now, certainly, if you're a fan of a different team, you can hate each other for that purposes, right? Rivalries are what makes sports great. But I feel like the average sports fan is pretty reasonable. They're the heartbeat of American society. Whatever your race, your ethnicity, your sexual orientation, wherever you were born, sports makes us equal, right? I really firmly believe that. Whether you are a neurosurgeon or you are a janitor, if you sit down at a table, you might not be able to talk about how to operate on a brain, But you can talk about whether or not you agree with a fourth down decision by the coach in your hometown. You can talk about who you think is going to win the national championship in college basketball or college football. You can talk about the local team. Wherever you are all over the world, we're on in all 50 states. People are listening to us right now all over the world. And everybody's opinion in the world of sports is equal. And what validates your opinion is whether or not you can bring to bear evidence to support your opinion. That's unique in the world of sports, I think. There aren't very many places where a neurosurgeon and a janitor can sit down in a conversation and be 100% equal in terms of being able to discuss whatever sporting event's going on. I think that is incredibly unique in our society. And I think it's one of the great things about our society, because when we talk about sports, sometimes we're able to talk in a way about issues that we're not able to touch otherwise. And this is something that fires me up going on in the world of sports and beyond, is this idea that we need to judge historic figures based on the modern day standards that exist today as opposed to the standards that existed when they lived. And we don't even do this in our own lives. But every single person who's listening to us right now will go to Thanksgiving dinner, or you might have gone to Easter dinner, and there will be somebody old at Easter with you, and they will say something, regardless of your race, your gender, your ethnicity, your religion, that is not considered to be an appropriate opinion today at the dinner table. Your grandma, your grandpa, an old aunt, an old uncle. Do you immediately cast that person out of your family and refuse to acknowledge them in any way that is remotely positive? Or do you say, when that happens, you know what, grandma or grandpa, things are different now? You might say things are different. You might even just say, you know what, I don't even want to get into this argument. That's my crazy old grandpa. He's got all sorts of crazy ideas. There ain't a damn person listening to me right now on the radio who at some point in their life has not had somebody from a different generation say something at the Thanksgiving, Christmas, Easter, whatever it is, family gathering, that you didn't think to yourself, "Whoo, I'm glad Grandpa ain't on social media." Man, that would go viral in a heartbeat if Grandma were posting all day long on Facebook. And hey, by the way, maybe she is, which is a little bit scary in and of itself. You still love them. You still probably respect them. You still want them to be in your family, even though you may not agree with every opinion they have. And guess what? One day, God willing, you're going to be the old person at the family dinner table. And guess what? I say things that are considered to be crazy now. And I'm not that old. Imagine what I'd say if I lived to be 90. I don't have a filter now. Can you imagine what kind of filter I'd have if I'm 90? And you know what? God willing, probably be some grandkids, maybe some great-grandkids who will say, "That's Grandpa Clay. He's been talking crazy for 60 years. You know what we actually do? We give old people more freedom to say exactly what they think than we do young people. You know why we do that? Because they've actually seen some stuff. The 18-year-old sitting down at your Easter dinner ain't seen nothing. They were born in 2001. You think they know some stuff? They weren't even alive when 9/11 happened. And they're going to lecture the whole family about how we should be responding to everything going on in the world today? Why don't you grow up a little? See the world. Maybe start to have a little bit different perspective. When you're 18, the great thing about being 18 is you think you know everything. By the time you're 40 or 50, you realize you really didn't know very much. But you have to live a little to realize it. And that's why most families, we give more freedom to old people to say what they really think. We allow them not to have filters. We allow their opinions not necessarily to be in the mainstream of society. We don't disown them from our families. We don't tell them they're not allowed to speak anymore because when they were young in the 1930s and 40s, things were different. In fact, a lot of us sit back and say, damn, when great-grandpa or great-grandma was alive, they fought the Nazis. Nowadays, my own kids sit around and call me a Nazi if they disagree with my political opinions. That's how safe our country has become. We've moved from fighting actual Nazis with actual concentration camps to calling people we disagree with Nazis on social media. Oh, I disagree with that guy's tax policy. He's a Nazi. Maybe not. I don't remember Hitler really spending a lot of time on the tax rate. Maybe he did. Maybe I just didn't cover it very much. Seems to me like Hitler had some rough stuff going on. We're going to adjust immigration policy. Nazi! Really? Is the adjustment to the immigration policy that we have concentration camps now? Maybe don't use the word Nazi as loosely. And maybe just use your damn brains and don't tear down a statue to a woman who raised $11 billion in 2019 dollars to fight actual Nazis because you don't like the lyrics to a song she sang in the 1930s. The standard that the Yankees and the Philadelphia Flyers adopted would not allow the vast majority of the walk-up music in Major League Baseball to be played. Have you listened to the unedited versions of most walk-up music in Major League Baseball? It glorifies domestic violence, drug dealing, sexual assault, racism, homophobia, misogyny. And that's lyrics that are playing in today's Major League Baseball stadiums. Not some lyrics that existed 100 years ago. We're talking about right now when people walk up to bat. What do the Philadelphia Flyers play during their games now? A lot of offensive lyrics. And we're going to judge a woman who is an icon, who is an American hero, based on the standards of today, based on lyrics to a song she sang that somebody else wrote? We're going to tear down her statue? I just find this to be mind-bogglingly insane. And sometimes I really do feel like in the national sports media, I am the only person with the balls to actually say what everybody else on the planet just about is thinking. If I didn't say this today, not one person in national media is going to come out and say this on the radio in the entire country, I bet. Why not? They're afraid of losing their job. That's the truth. It's easier to come on here and be like, Russell Westbrook stinks. Nobody's going to get fired over Russell Westbrook stinks opinions. But ultimately, I feel like I've got a responsibility here to use my platform and point out absurdity and divisive and stupid decisions by people in positions of power who are acting like a bunch of pussy willows. And if someday it gets me fired, so be it. I'm pretty rich now. Another couple of years of this, hell, I'll kick back, I'll go to the beach, kick my shoes off, drink a beer, just live in my beach house. I ain't got a lot of worries in my own private life. But I got a lot of worries when I see the stupidity that surrounds me on a day-to-day basis. And I feel like a lot of you out there listening to me right now, of all races, religions, ethnicities, and genders, you feel the same. But you're worried yourself about becoming a target. If I ever get super rich, Lord help us, because I'm really going to talk then. But I'm getting kind of rich now. And money gives you freedom. It's the best thing about money. Best thing about money is it gives you the freedom to say what you really think. I always like to say, I want F you money. As in, I can say F you to anybody and they can't do anything to me. Not there yet. Moving towards it. Because money gives you the ability to say what you really think. And that's what disappoints me so much about the Flyers and the Yankees. They've got owners. They've got rich owners. That's what we need in this country is some people who have enough money to push back against setting precedents like these. Because when you tear down a statue of Kate Smith, what you're doing is setting the precedent that the next owner feels obligated to follow. And I don't know what the benefit of having money is if you're not willing to use that money to stand behind what you really believe in. And so this has me really fired up. It had me fired up over the weekend. It's not just about Kate Smith, who's been dead 33 years and who sang a song that somebody decided they didn't like in 2019, almost 100 years ago. It's about the precedent that we're setting and consistently applying historic standards of history to our modern era, to old figures, and trying to tear down history in this country based on a perverted view of what somebody should have believed. And here's the thing. The people advocating this don't understand that history doesn't stop. There is something that almost every single one of us does today that will be considered offensive 100 years from now. I don't know what it is. It might be eating meat. I've said this before. It might be that if you and I live to be 90, that we're going to be at Thanksgiving dinner and they're not going to eat turkeys anymore because it's offensive to eat animals. You think I'm joking, but there may be people out there who say, we got to tear down these statues. These people used to eat animals. 300 years from now, they might be like, great, 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 great grandpa was a meat eater. And everybody will be like, gross. They ate steak? What were they thinking? How did they not know that they were destroying the planet and that all of us were going to have to live like it's Atlantis with snorkels and fins, and we're all going to get eaten by sharks all the time because grandpa and grandma had to eat steaks? We got to tear down their statues. I have no idea what's going to be. You don't either. But 300 years from now, something that we do now is going to be considered gross. It might be having sex. They might be like, grandma and grandpa used to have sex. Can you believe that? They used to get pregnant and walk around with babies in their bellies. They didn't have the home baby raiser where you just watch a baby grow up in a little petri dish in your house. Women used to actually have babies and they would give birth to them naturally. Can you believe that? They would get fat. I don't know what history is going to look like. I don't know how we're going to look in history. I know that we're going to do a lot of things that are considered to be crazy in 300 years. The doctor who came in and put leeches on people, he was a genius 200 years ago. You know what we need to do to cure this person of cancer? We need to put leeches on them. And people are like, man, that makes a lot of sense. I'm going to go get some leeches right now. Let's take all their blood out of their body and make them weaker. Civil War, doctor used to walk in with a big sword. It's like, uh-oh, that arm got shot. Here, I'm going to chop it off with the same sword that I've been using for everybody else so that everybody else can get infected. Seemed like a genius. Somebody said, you know what? Instead of just sawing this guy's arm off, we should give him a piece of wood to bite on so we're being humane. You know what? That's really, that guy was considered to be like the greatest surgeon of his time. Hey, we don't want him to chip their teeth. Let's give him this piece of wood to bite on while we saw off their arm. Oh, that's really humane of you. It's really smart. History evolves. Whatever we think is brilliant today oftentimes looks insanely stupid in the future. People thought Columbus was crazy. He's like, I'm going to go. I don't think the world just falls off the side of the earth. We're like, Columbus, you are a crazy mofo. He's like, you know what? I got this idea. I think if I get in a boat and I go long enough, I'm going to reach India. And I'm going to make a lot more money because I think we don't have to go to India the way we go to India now. He said, I think the world might be circular. But like, man, that dude is crazy, that Columbus. That man is going to go right off the side of the world because it just hits a big waterfall and boom, everybody goes off the side of the world and they die. Columbus found the New World, thought he found India. Right idea. Didn't realize how big the world was. But before Columbus did that, everybody's sitting around like, man, that Columbus dude, he's crazy. That man thinks that this world is round. Can you believe that? He thinks he's not just going to go off the side of a cliff and die. And he had to persuade everybody to get on his boat with him. I think it was Isaac Newton said, if I've seen far, it's because I've stood on the shoulders of giants. Easy example about how he managed to find the far reaches of, at that time, science. Was because of the people that had come before him. What they had seen allowed him to see farther. What others did, like Kate Smith in fighting the Nazis and raising $11 billion, allowed us to have the freedoms that we have today. And the fact that we don't understand and that teams aren't willing to stand up for the people that came before us because there's some small flaw in their larger life that offends us today is infuriating to me. Absolutely infuriating. Dub, do we have anybody who wants to weigh in on the phones? I know we had a ton of calls, but I've been talking a lot because this got me riled up. Anybody still want to talk?
Yeah, we got Roger in Houston.
Roger, what's up?
Hey, good morning, Clay. Hey, listen, I just wanted to say that if you're truly Nostradamus and you're right about being neat and having sex being offensive, then I'm probably going to be that crazy old grandpa sitting at that table here a few years down the road.
Thanks for the call. I don't know what's going to... That's the point, right? We don't know what we do today that will be considered offensive by our great-grandchildren. But it might and probably is something that is insanely commonplace. Getting pregnant and having a baby that you keep in your stomach in 250 years may seem insanely crazy and old school and absurd. Eating meat, things that everybody does, having actual sex as opposed to virtual sex all the time as part of the matrix may be considered really strange. We don't know. But people who are judging based on today's historic standards, the irony is they're often very historically illiterate and don't understand that society is constantly progressing. They think that they are perfectly evolved. The reality is those people who are the most judgmental today are probably doing tons of things that 300 years from now will be considered insanely offensive or unacceptable behavior. We don't know what those things are because guess what? We're human and we're all product of our times. Who else?
Last one, Catfish Jake in Nashville.
Catfish Jake, what's up, my man?
Hey, what's up, buddy? Hey, I think I tweeted you already a few of these things, but the walk-up music is insane to me that they can play that.
But if your standard, I think that's a really smart take. If your standard is that any lyric in any song that is considered to be offensive is unacceptable, then virtually every single Major League Baseball walk-up music has either the artist has had an offensive lyric or the current songs that they're playing now are offensive if you break them down from the perspective of what's acceptable and what's unacceptable. There is zero doubt of that. Whether they're rock, whether they're rap, whatever the type of music is, every artist that is singing those has had at some point in time a lyric that would be considered offensive by some people. Zero doubt. So I am fired up about this. Does anybody feel strongly about this different than what I've already said? Going once, going twice on the crew. All right. We're going to put this to bed for the moment. Although you'll be able to hear me rail on this more on Outkick the Show on Periscope and Facebook this afternoon. But we are now going to pivot into there's one thing I can say about this show in general. We got a lot of range. So we're going to go from talking about the historical implications of Kate Smith's statue being taken down by the Philadelphia Flyers and her song being not allowed anymore by the Yankees and the Flyers to what happened in last night's Game of Thrones. I can encourage you to download the podcast. Search it out. My name, Clay Travis, or you can search using the phrase Outkick. We do a best of, which will be all Game of Thrones Monday. And then everything else on the Monday edition will be the normal show.
This is Outkick the Coverage with Clay Travis.
NBA and NHL playoffs underway for those of you waking up on the West Coast. In the NBA, it appears we're only going to have one series. The Spurs and the Nuggets tied up at two games apiece as they go back to Denver. anything could theoretically happen in that series. The number two seed Denver Nuggets going up against the number seven seed San Antonio Spurs. The Nuggets would be a favorite in that series now that they managed to get a win on the road in San Antonio. Must do it scenario down 2-1. We'll see what happens in game five. Otherwise, it seems to me that almost everything has been decided now in the world of the NBA, right? Certainly somebody could come back from a 3-0 or 3-1 series deficit. We've seen the 3-1 comeback before, but it seems pretty unlikely. The Celtics are the only team that have already advanced. They swept the Pacers. Good season for the Pacers, given the Victor Oladipo injury, but they just didn't have the horses against the Celtics. Brad Stevens' team played phenomenally well in the final 5 minutes pretty much of every game. They found ways to get it done, and as a result, Celtics advance probably to play against the Milwaukee Bucks, who are up 3-0 and play what I would imagine will be the final game of their series against the Pistons tonight. Meanwhile, the Warriors get the road, back-to-back road wins, as I told you I thought they would do in the Staples Center. They take down the Clippers in Game 4. They're now up 3-1. The Raptors beat the Magic 2 times in a row in Orlando to go up 3-1. You would expect that series would come to a close in Game 5. And the Trailblazers take down the Thunder to go up 3-1 in that series again. Tonight, we could have 2 closeout games. We'll see what happens. We've got the Milwaukee Bucks taking on the Detroit Pistons. I expect the Bucks to win that game. And then the Rockets going up against the Jazz. I expect, honestly, the Rockets to win that game or to close it out in 5. The only real series I think that we're going to see go to potentially 6 or 7 is the Spurs-Nuggets. I know the Nets and the 76ers has had some spice, as Charles Barkley put it, in terms of ejections and the teams not liking each other very much. But I would expect that the 76ers would close that series out in Philadelphia. And most of these series, I believe, will be over in the first round by Tuesday, with the exception of the Spurs going up against the Nuggets. So that is pretty much what is going on in the world of the NBA. In the NHL, if you were paying attention to the NHL, a lot of excitement going on in the world of hockey. Looks like we're trending towards several Game 7s. What exactly those will look like, who knows? How many Game 7s we'll have in the first round, we don't know. We already had so many crazy different scenarios and situations in the NHL just based on the Tampa Bay Lightning getting swept and the Calgary Flames getting wiped out in 5 games. Last night, the Bruins went on the road against Toronto and set up Game 7 in Boston. The Bruins take down the Maple Leafs, and the Sharks went on the road and beat the Golden Knights in Game 6. Now both the Sharks and the Bruins will get Game 7s at home. Will we get more Game 7s? Well, the Capitals are on the road against the Hurricanes. Meanwhile, the Preds, who lost Game 5 to the Dallas Stars, on the road down in Dallas, trying to force a Game 7, which would be played in Nashville. We'll see what happens in both of those games, which will be taking place tonight in the NHL, setting up what could be a very, very memorable Wednesday. Theoretically, we could have 2 Game 7s on Tuesday in hockey and 2 Game 7s on Wednesday in hockey. So that is what is taking place in the universe of the NBA and the NHL. I think the biggest loser in the NBA in the first round yet again has been Russell Westbrook, in addition to the fact that he was not good last night in allowing his team to fall behind 3-1. And in addition to the fact that the last 2 years for Russell Westbrook since Kevin Durant has left, the Oklahoma City Thunder in the first round of the playoffs are 4-11, and they are in danger now of being eliminated by the Portland Trailblazers. Again, they are 4-11. Russell Westbrook scoreless for 26 minutes. I watched the game on Friday night. I thought he behaved like a chump on the floor in the way that he's doing his rocking the baby and all his ridiculous antics on the floor. I don't think Russell Westbrook has done himself any favors. I think he looks like what I believe he is, the most overhyped player in the NBA today. When push comes to shove and the postseason arrives, Russell Westbrook vanishes. His team can't win. They haven't won a playoff series since Kevin Durant left. And he's doing himself no favors in the way he's responding to the media after the games. This is what happened after Friday night's game. He also brought in Paul George with him. This is audio from the post-game press conferences. Listen to this, Russell Westbrook and Paul George.
Barry Trammell with the Oklahoman. Russell, first half, both teams struggled offensively. It was sort of a slug of a game. Both teams got going in the second half. What happened that sort of reversed the tone of this game?
Next question.
Yeah, Russ, the fourth quarter, you got a 15-point lead. They catch up. What happened the last 6, 7, 8 minutes that reversed the momentum and let you guys burst back away?
Kerry Yeager's Portland Tribune. Paul, why did you dunk there at the end of the game?
Next question.
So I don't know who advises guys like Russell Westbrook and Paul George, but do they not understand how awful they look when they behave this way? And I understand that sometimes you get questions that you think are dumb or that you would prefer not to answer, but contractually you're obligated to do this. There are all sorts of things at everybody's job who is driving into work this morning that I guarantee you, if I just open up phone lines and I said, what do you have to do at your work that you hate to do? Everybody would have an answer. Every single person who has ever had a job has had an aspect of that job that they don't like. But I think the NBA needs to step up and find these guys a ton of money to make them realize the importance of not looking like complete asses in the post-game press conference. Answer questions. You are obligated to do it contractually. That is a part of your job. You might not like it. If you don't want to do it, that's fine, but you should be fined substantial amounts of money for refusing to do your job. And if you're going to act like this, you better perform. And Russell Westbrook ain't performing. I don't know how you can be a fan of this guy in Oklahoma City. I'll be honest with you. I find Russell Westbrook to be thoroughly unlikable. Is he a talented basketball player? Yeah, very talented basketball player. I find him to be thoroughly unlikable otherwise and unable to handle basic questions like that. And this is in Oklahoma City. We're not talking about him being in New York City or him being in L.A. where there's a media onslaught all the time. There's only a couple of dudes that even cover the Oklahoma City Thunder basketball team. And if anything, people are way going too easy on Russell Westbrook. Again, his team since Kevin Durant has left, 11-4 they have been on the losing side. They have won 4 games and they have lost 11, and they are trending towards losing in 5 games against the Portland Trailblazers. I find Lillard and the Trailblazers to be an infinitely more likable team than the Oklahoma City Thunder. It's rare that I watch a game outside of gambling interest in the NBA and really feel strongly one way or the other. I find the Oklahoma City Thunder to be thoroughly unlikable. I mean, the way that Russell Westbrook behaves on the court while most of the time his team is getting its ass kicked is pathetic. And so it just carries forward in those post-game press conference moments. I think the NBA should fine him like $3 million. Money goes to charity, so more power to him. Adam Silver, I think, is going to come in for some fire here down the line because the NBA playoff ratings are tanking, and I think a lot of people this year are going to realize how much the NBA relies on LeBron James to carry the overall league. And without LeBron and with really only one compelling first-round series here, I think, what are we doing the math on? One was a sweep. I think that 6 of these series are likely to end in 5 games, and one series between the San Antonio Spurs and the Denver Nuggets may go 6 or 7 games and actually have some drama associated with it. Now, maybe the Warriors and the Rockets in round 2 is going to be really good and bring a lot of people in, but I think there's a lot of people who aren't even aware the Warriors and the Rockets are set to play in the second round right now. And maybe the Eastern Conference, the 4 teams that we've been talking about all year with the Bucks and the Celtics and the 76ers and the what's the 4th team there that's good that's in the mix? The Celtics, the 76ers, the Bucks, and and who's the 4th team? Who am I missing here? This is what happens early morning radio when you're sitting around trying to do everything off the top of your head. The Raptors, they don't count. They're in Toronto. That's a shot at Rachel Bonetta then. One of those 4 teams, who knows who's going to end up winning the Eastern Conference, right? Nobody has any clue. But maybe some of those series are going to end up being decent, but we're trending towards epically bad NBA ratings because, by and large, it's a LeBron-driven league, and LeBron's not involved in the league. And I've said this for a long time. The NBA typically doesn't have a league. It has a player. After Michael Jordan left, the NBA ratings tanked. I think after LeBron leaves, the same thing is going to happen, just to a little bit lesser extent, because LeBron has never been as popular as Michael Jordan. All right. The other thing that's got me fired up before we go into Alex Marvez, and I'll talk about this to finish off the show. These Philadelphia Flyers and the New York Yankees have been playing a rendition of God Bless America from the 1930s by a woman named Kate Smith. Kate Smith raised $600 million during World War II to fight Adolf Hitler. She is an American hero. She was given the Presidential Medal of Honor by Ronald Reagan in 1982. She died in 1986. She would sometimes sing God Bless America at the Philadelphia Flyer events. And one year she came and sang a great deal in 1975, and they ended up winning the Stanley Cup. So they put a statue of her up outside of the arena. A couple of triggered perpetual losers who are always trying to be victimized decided to go back and look through every song that Kate Smith had ever sung, including in the 1930s. And in the 1930s, she sang a satirical song that was also sung by many black singers at the time that many believe was ridiculing racism. That is, it was calling attention to the absurdity of the way the black people were treated in America in the 1930s, but in a satirical fashion. And she sang that song. It wasn't her song. She sang the lyrics to that song as part of her career. That song is not available anywhere, but somebody decides to do research about every song she has ever sang. They were offended by her lyrics. They notify the Yankees and the Flyers, NHL team and a Major League Baseball team, and both of them end up making the decision to pull her rendition of God Bless America. And then the Flyers take the next step of tearing down her statue and removing it. I'm going to get you all fired up in the final segment of the hour. I've been talking about this earlier in the show, but I have a poll question up. Do you agree with the NHL Flyers' decision to ban Kate Smith's rendition of God Bless America and tear down her statue over offensive song lyrics from the 1930s? Over 6,000 of you have voted. Over 6,000 of you have voted in the first 20 minutes that this thing is up. 96% of you disagree with the Philadelphia Flyer decision. 96%. It's almost impossible for us to have a poll with 96% agreement. 96% of you disagree with the Flyers. We're going to talk about this to finish off the show. I'm going to dive in, get your popcorn. But up next, Alex Marvez. It's NFL Draft Week here in my hometown of Nashville. The draft will be taking place on Thursday, Friday, and Saturday. We'll get you ready with the latest. Is Kyler Murray going to go number one overall? Maybe a little bit of uncertainty. What's going to happen with Nick Bosa? What does Alex Marvez see on the horizon here as we are now 3 days out from the NFL draft? We will discuss with him next. This is Outkick the Coverage on Fox Sports Radio.
Be sure to catch live editions of Outkick the Coverage with Clay Travis weekdays at 6 a.m. Eastern, 3 a.m. Pacific.
Welcome back, Geico Outkick Studios. Let's talk about Russell Westbrook and how his responses in the postgame are really doing ultimately not only a disservice to the NBA, but also to him, because in postgame press conferences, you have an opportunity to allow people to see more of you and to give your worldview. If you think you're being unfairly treated by the media, the best way to handle that is to speak directly to the public in a compelling fashion. I just thought this was interesting. We played the Russell Westbrook and Paul George clip where both of them are behaving like asses. Here's CJ McCollum from the Portland Trailblazers when he's asked about his thoughts as the Trailblazers went up 3-1. I didn't know this about CJ McCollum. The one reason why I think these media availabilities exist, and one of the primary reasons why they exist, is so fans can have a better sense for the people that they're watching on the court. Here, contrasted with Russell Westbrook's behavior in the press conference, is CJ McCollum talking about how losing last year and getting swept impacted him. Listen.
Swept last year. It was really embarrassing, and everybody talked about it. It was on TV every day. I went on TV, and they talked about us getting swept. They talked about me getting traded. Talked about, you know, how we can't win together, you know, all that stuff. We remember it. And we understand that feeling of going home early. You know, I was able to, fortunately, you know, able to fly to Europe and see my brother play because the season ended so early. And I told him this year I ain't going to be able to make it. So big bro's staying up right now in Russia watching 6, 7 a.m. He understands what we're going through, what we're trying to accomplish, and I think our team.
All right, that's just one 30-second clip. But in that 30-second clip, C.J. McCollum talked about how getting swept impacted him, talked about how it impacted his life, talked about the fact that rumors were he was going to get traded because they couldn't get it done, told you that he has a brother who's playing in Russia and that he traveled over to Europe to go watch his brother play in person, and that his brother is staying up till 6 or 7 a.m. every morning in Russia to see how his brother does in that series. All of those things make me like C.J. McCollum and make me interested in his story. I would have never known them but for the press availability 30 seconds that we just played for you. If you are not intelligent enough to understand that the reason why people care about you is oftentimes because of your ability to share your story with them, I don't know what to say to Russell Westbrook and to Paul George. Other than C.J. McCollum's taking advantage of an opportunity, not just on the basketball court, but off as well, that you aren't. And I'm rooting for C.J. McCollum and the Portland Trailblazers and Damian Lillard because I like those guys. They seem like likable humans. And if I have to choose between rooting for the likable human or the unlikable human, like most of you, I'm going to pick the likable human. Here's a likable human. His name is Alex Marvez. Alex, you've been in a lot of these press conferences. I imagine you've probably seen some of this Russell Westbrook controversy. Have you seen this? Have you paid attention to it?
Zero.
All right. Do we still have the Russell Westbrook audio? Alex hasn't heard this. You've been in a ton of press conferences, Alex. You've had to ask athletes a lot of questions. Here's how Russell Westbrook and Paul George responded to questions in the post game. You know, they're sitting at the table there. Everybody's got to gather around and ask questions. Here's how they responded on Friday.
Barry Trammell with the Oklahoman. Russell, first half, both teams struggled offensively. It was sort of a slug of a game. Both teams got going in the second half. What happened that sort of reversed the tone of this game?
Next question.
Yeah, Russ, the fourth quarter, you got a 15-point lead. They catch up. What happened the last 6, 7, 8 minutes – that reverse the momentum and let you guys burst back away?
Kerry Yeager's Portland Tribune. Paul, why did you dunk there at the end of the game?
Next question.
What should be done to these guys? I said you should fine them millions of dollars. I mean, they have a contractual obligation to answer questions. You've sat there in the press conference. You're asking questions. I just played that C.J. McCollum answer, which is, you know, a thoughtful, interesting attempt to answer a question, which makes you like C.J. McCollum more. I don't know how tone-deaf Russell Westbrook and Paul George are or who is advising them, but there's not very many people who listen to that and hear the basic level of disrespect and think, oh, I like Russell Westbrook more or I like Paul George more.
Well, here's the thing. Like back in the old days when I was like a beat writer, I would have been mortified. And I was the president of the Pro Football Writers of America. I worked with the NFL to help shape the media policy that exists today that, you know, actually has some teeth to it in terms of what you could get fined, you know, for if you don't speak to the media, cooperation, making sure that there's certain times during the off season where members of teams have to talk. So I get all that. But as I morphed into more of a columnist and sports commentator, I absolutely love that. To me, it's easy. If you want me to tell your story rather than you, great. If you want to look like this and this is how you want to be portrayed, wonderful. Perfect. I love it. You give me the power now to write my own narrative about you and your team. So because you refuse to answer the questions. And, you know, is the Heat getting to Russell Wilson type, or not Russell Wilson, Russell Westbrook type story becomes an entree onto itself. You're not going to find these guys millions of dollars just because that's not how the media policy works. Will they be fined? Yeah. I mean, is it, you know, $10,000, $15,000? Probably a warning letter at first, potentially, just explaining their obligation to media. The other thing that we don't know, did these guys have a blow up with the media behind the scenes? Is there something going on where they're upset at a columnist, upset at a beat writer, and will it ultimately blow over? I also think, too, the majority of fans, if you like Oklahoma City, then you know what? If these guys win, they can say what they want. You see what I'm saying? That's the other thing, too.
They're not winning,
though, for that sort of things, right?
They're not winning. They're 4-11 since Kevin Durant left, and it looks like they may be 4-12 after the next game in Portland.
Then it falls on them, right? And then that's another thing that you do to just continue to bury yourself as a player, right? And you alienate your fans, and it's dumb. And listen, if the media relations guy can't convey this to them, then they got to have a long talk with the media relations guy to explain to them why it is beneficial to not come across the way that you did in those types of settings. But to me, hey, listen, I'd rather hear something like that than, honestly, than cliche answers about the game itself. Because I think now it leads to some other stories about how the Oklahoma City Thunder have just, you know, they're in disarray. I mean, that to me becomes the narrative at that point when you get something that outrageous.
Yeah, I think they're going to have to clean house. And I think ultimately Russell Westbrook is just a mess, and that he is a guy that is toxic in many ways. All right, let's come back to the NFL. NFL draft is going on, right?
Yes.
Starting on Thursday. Are you going to be in town for it?
But of course, yes.
All right, so welcome to my town in advance. The big drama is going to start at the top. We talk about this every week, but now it's officially the next time we talk, we'll actually have had the draft take place. So this is your last chance with us. Do you think Kyler Murray still goes number one overall to the Cardinals?
He goes to the Cardinals, but I can't guarantee you number one.
So you think it's possible they trade back?
They're trying to. I mean, that's the whole thing, because they realize no one else is going after Kyler Murray. So if you can get Kyler Murray, let's say, at three, if you can convince the Jets, hey, look, you know, Nick Bosa is not going to be around for you if this is your guy. You better move up. You better trump the 49ers, you know, and you better move up and get him. We'll drop down to three, and then at that point put themselves in position for Kyler Murray along with an extra draft pick, absolutely. I am largely convinced. I mean, I'd say, you know, funnier things have happened. You know, but from my conversations with people, I'm about 95% convinced that Kyler Murray is the guy, and it really comes from the head coach in Cliff Kingsbury. Now, when he took the job in Arizona, was it a matter of, hey, you know what, I'm willing to coach whomever? You know, because a lot of times in these interviews, coaches say things like, oh, yeah, I can assemble this coaching staff, right?
Every single person on the planet has lied in a job interview to try to get the job that they want.
You see what I'm saying?
Yeah.
And so you end up with Cliff Kingsbury's, oh, yeah, Josh Rosen. I can win with Josh Rosen, right? But then all, in the back of your mind, you're thinking, I'm going to do what I can and get Kyler Murray. So I think that's where we're at with all this, and I think Rosen goes, I don't know to where. You know, if we believe Joel Klatt, and Joel's one of the most upstanding people I've met in the journalism industry, and as a person, I you know, he says that the Cardinals have already turned down an inquiry of a second-round pick. Maybe they'll feel differently now. Maybe they have an understanding with a team that, hey, if we end up drafting Kyler Murray, we're going to send Josh Rosen to you. Don't worry about another bidding process. You guys, we're good. You'll get him for a second-round pick, and we'll go from there. But I really believe that the Cardinals trying to move down, hoping that one of these teams gets worried about holding the bag. Depends upon the Raiders draft board as well. At number four, this one gets interesting. If there is the belief that there are three truly elite defensive players, if you go by that understanding that Nick Bosa, Josh Allen, and Quinnen Williams are the guys, and then that there's a drop back with everyone else, would the Raiders want to get involved in potentially moving up to be able to get their guy? You know, is it a quantum leap when you have two extra first-round picks to go from 4-1 because you think Nick Bosa is going to change the scope of your entire defense if you get him, if you think he's a, you know, J.J. Watt type of impact type player? I'm not saying the Raiders will do this because they have so many needs, but these are the types of things that teams are still going through right now as far as what happens with that number one overall pick. But I do believe Kyler Murray is ending up with the Cardinals.
Where do you think Kyler Murray would go if the Cardinals weren't drafting a quarterback? Because this is always fascinating to me. Like, okay, he may well go number one overall, but all it takes is one team, and it just may be perfect for Kyler Murray that you got Cliff Kingsbury and the Cardinals, and they have the number one overall pick. But if he didn't get drafted by the Cardinals, let's say the Cardinals at the last minute said, you know what, We love Josh Rosen, and they took Nick Bosa number one overall, like, you know, a lot of teams might if they were in their position. How far down the draft board do you think Kyler Murray would then fall?
Well, let's go over a couple teams here and possibilities. Oakland at number four, I think they'd have to have a conversation about it. I just can't see John Gruden, who's always in win-now mode, making that type of plunge at number four, especially knowing the type of defensive help that they need, and John having no real history of not only ever drafting a rookie quarterback high, but ever really working with one on an extensive basis. And, of course, there's the Antonio Brown factor. He wants to win now. He doesn't want to have to break in a new quarterback. So, you know, I think we got to dismiss the Raiders at that point. I don't think the Bucs do it. I think they're committed to Jameis Winston for another season. The New York Giants, there's been no sign that they have interest in Kyler Murray as much as maybe a Dwayne Haskins, a Daniel Jones, a guy cut from the Eli Manning, Peyton Manning cloth, having played under David Cutcliffe at Duke, just like the Manning brothers have an association with Cutcliffe. So I don't think the Giants are part of it. The Jags went down the Nick Foles road. They're not going with a quarterback. The Lions, I still think they're committed to Matt Stafford. I think they'll talk about it, but I think Stafford is their guy, and I don't think it's a good scenario to have, you know, Stafford as your starting quarterback as a sitting duck for a year. You know, Denver. Buffalo, not in the market. Denver, they've already said they don't like short quarterbacks. Cincinnati, well, you know, an intriguing team just because Andy Dalton hasn't been a difference maker in so long on a consistent basis. But are the Bengals still married to Andy Dalton? Will Mike Brown just, you know, not budge when it comes to Andy Dalton and believe that Zach Taylor can make him better? So we got to throw that one out there. Green Bay, they're not doing that at 12. They may go quarterback later in the first round. They've been scouting guys. You know, and it's not just because of the possibility of someday moving on from Aaron Rodgers, but it's also wanting to have a decent backup that you can develop potential trade chip for you down the road. That leaves Miami at 13. I don't think he gets past Miami. I don't think he would get past Washington at 15. So one of those two teams, and the Atlanta Falcons are sandwiched in between, they're not going quarterback, I think would be Miami or Washington. And there could be bidding between those two teams, by the way. If Kyler Murray starts getting around 8, 9, 10, you know, all of a sudden you may get that itchy finger, make that phone call to whatever team is drafting and try to get them there.
All right, so that is intriguing. So if you're the Cardinals, you might think, hey, we could drop back even to 8 or 9 and still get him if there were somebody willing to trade up. The question is anybody really in love enough with Nick Bosa or anybody else to be willing to move to 1? As you said, maybe you're looking there with the Jets and you're selling to them, hey, if you really like this guy, you need to make the move, but otherwise it'd be difficult. You mentioned several different quarterbacks there. If I told you over under 4, are you going right at that number of quarterbacks that will be drafted in the first round? It seems pretty clear that Kyler Murray will go in the first round. Seems very clear that, that at least to me, Drew Lock, also Dwayne Haskins, and Daniel Jones, all four of those guys will go first round. You buying in?
Yeah, I'm buying in on that, and I think that's a safe number. I just don't hear enough buzz about a Will Greer or a Ryan Lindsley that someone is going to move up to grab them at the end of the first round. I think they're considered projects. No one's really sure about their NFL futures, as you know. And so if you're not really sure about a guy, I mean, you could feel good about him and you could take him in round two. But, you know, look, in first round, by the way, for quarterbacks, just to be clear here, out of the starters last year, or going into the season, I should say, 21 of them are first-round picks. I mean, you know, you could find quarterbacks later on in the draft, but if you need to address a position, you're generally drafting quality in the first round. I just don't think that the other guys rate that high that you would move up to get them. I don't think you really feel, for example, that Will Greer is like, oh, I'm going to worry about him getting a 5-year contract as opposed to a 4-year contract. I just don't find that people are that, you know, that attached to him or to Ryan Lindsley. Listen, I could be proven wrong. Maybe there's a team that gets shut out in the quarterback market in the first round. Maybe, like, let's say Washington gets left holding the bag, and they're like, man, we want to get a developmental, you know, we want a quarterback. We got Case Keenum. Let's do something here. Let's move up out of the second round, get into the end of the first round to make sure we get our guy, make sure we get him on a 5-year contract, because all first-round picks get 5-year contracts as opposed to the 4-year contracts of players taken between rounds 2 and 7. But I think 4 is the right number, Clay.
4 is the right number. Who would you buy stock in that you think is going to be the most impact? One guy right now that you think is light, and we don't know exactly where they're going to go, which makes it a little bit more challenging. But who do you think will be the most impactful rookie in terms of actually making a difference on the field in year one?
In quarterbacks?
Yeah.
Yeah, I think Kyler Murray, just because I think he's going to play immediately. Yeah. You know, that's it. Now, and I think, too, you could see the Arizona Cardinals get off to a pretty quick start because teams are going to wonder what the heck's going on here. You know, you're going by Cliff Kingsbury and a college playbook and trying to see what is he going to bring to the NFL. So I think there's that element of surprise that could happen early on in the season that would give Kyler Murray the chance to succeed. Now, he's going to have a lot of stuff thrown at him defensively that he's never seen before. It's a different world in the NFL. But he would be the guy to play. See, I don't see any of these other quarterbacks, you know, necessarily starting. And one thing we should point out, too, with Denver, and this one was interesting with Joe Flacco. He goes public, and Joe, as you know, just he's the average Joe, right? The guy doesn't really say very much. He's not sticking up for himself. But you could tell last year with his body language when they put him out in the Wildcat as a wide receiver and Lamar Jackson's on the field, how thrilled he was with all that. The guy didn't want to be a mentor. The guy wants to play. He still believes he's a bona fide Super Bowl caliber quarterback. He said publicly last week, Broncos don't need to draft a quarterback. So if the Broncos go in the first round and take a QB, I don't think Joe Flacco is necessarily going to be helping groom this guy. You know, Eli Manning, I can see him because he has a vested interest in the New York Giants. He's played there since 04. He's a Giants legend, and he's a mensch, okay? So he's going to help this, he's going to help out the young guy. That's just the nature of his business, all right? I don't see Joe Flacco necessarily doing that to try to accelerate the growth of a young quarterback to get him on the field because Joe knows what a pivotal year it is for him, and he's got 2 years remaining on his current contract. So there's a little bit of a dynamic as well. How would Philip Rivers, for example, respond if the Chargers took a quarterback late in the draft in the first round or even traded for a Josh Rosen? It's like, well, are you telling me that the clock is ticking on my career? Philip has never had that experience before where he's been at any threat of losing his starting job. There are some dynamics that go into all of this. Maybe at some point Philip will say, yeah, I'm ready for this type of thing, but I don't see it as right now. So again, as a team, you got to judge the pulse of your starting quarterback, and if you bring in a new QB, you got to hope that the quarterback is ready to embrace him, or it could get ugly.
What about other than the quarterback? Nick Bosa, your guy who you think will be the most impactful other than the quarterback position?
I think Nick Bosa, but I tell you what, people, I just keep hearing this incredible buzz about Ed Oliver out of the University of Houston, and you know, this guy's not getting out of the top 10. I mean, he is just, they consider him to be one of these really disruptive interior guys. I know he doesn't have the ideal arm length, you know, which is something that, you know, you consider when it comes to the whole, you know, draft tangibles, if you will, you know, the physical aspect of it. But this guy, when you're talking about a league where interior pass rush is really the key to everything, Ed Oliver really checks all those boxes. I see him as being a guy who could really make a big-time splash. So much of it too, Clay. I mean, does a guy fit in a defense? Does he have to make an adjustment to a certain style? I mean, look, I'll use D Ford as an example. Played with his hand on the ground at Auburn, goes to a team that drafts him as a 3-4 outside linebacker. He's got to learn how to do some drops, some things he's uncomfortable with. Can't make the type of splash that you would expect from him early on. The other thing about Nick Bosa is, by the way, hasn't played a ton of college football. You know, we look at the measurables, the guy is a beast, okay? But and I think he's going to be a great player, but Clay, what did he play, in 2 games last year for Ohio State or 3 before going on the shelf? I mean, and he turned pro so early, you just wonder how much is there for him to learn. Is it going to take him maybe half a season before he really starts to get going in his NFL career as well? So just some it's an interesting draft. I'm not going to say I'm gaga over this draft. The star power simply isn't there like it's been in the past. But when it comes to intrigue, especially with the quarterbacks and just not having a clear number 2, number 3, number 4 overall pick, I think it's a pretty neat deal.
Outstanding stuff as always, Alex Marvez. The New York Yankees and the Philadelphia Flyers are cowards. What did they do, and why was it so pathetic? I'll tell you next to finish off Monday edition of Outkick.
Fox Sports Radio has the best sports talk lineup in the nation. Catch all of our shows at foxsportsradio.com. And within the iHeartRadio app, search FSR to listen live.
Welcome back, Geico Outkick Studios. Poll question is up, and if you don't know about this controversy, then congratulations. You were probably busy over Easter weekend doing things that distracted you from the absurdity that often occurs in the world of sports. There's a woman named Kate Smith. You may not know Kate Smith. Probably, in fact, you don't, because she died in 1986. She was a famous singer who was renowned for her versions of God Bless America. And during World War II, she was so popular on the radio that she helped to raise over $600 million in war bonds to fight against Hitler and Nazi Germany. Kind of put into perspective, $600 million, a lot of money now. But $600 million back in the 1930s, the late 30s and early 40s, roughly $11 billion today. She was awarded the Presidential Medal of Freedom by Ronald Reagan for her efforts to combat the Nazis as an entertainer in the 1930s and 1940s. She would also travel over 500,000 miles to support the troops that were fighting Nazi Germany. She became a famous singer, and as a famous singer, her rendition of God Bless America became popular in Philadelphia, played at Flyers games. And they noticed that when they played Kate Smith's version of God Bless America, the Flyers, for whatever reason, had an incredible record. And so it became a trend whenever they played big games in Philadelphia, they would play Kate Smith's version of God Bless America. And they even started to bring her into Philadelphia to sing in front of the crowds there. And when she did that, the crowds would go crazy. And in fact, they put up a statue to her to outside of the Philadelphia Flyers arena because to help celebrate their 1975 Stanley Cup title. All of that is indisputably true. She also was used for God Bless America in Yankee Stadium as the singer there for years and years until somebody got triggered by the fact that in the 1930s, she sang songs written by other people that had offensive lyrics. They were actually satirical songs designed to make fun of racism. They were sung by many black artists, including Kate Smith. And so Kate Smith sang these lyrics. Somebody decided to look up the lyrics to a song that she sang back in the 1930s and get offended by it. 33 years after she died, nearly 90 years after she actually sang these songs. Now, the songs weren't playing in the Philadelphia Flyers or the New York Yankee Stadium, of course. But the teams decided to bow to the winds of offensive people who were offended and sending in a couple of emails. And the Flyers decided, along with the Yankees, to pull her rendition of God Bless America. The Flyers took an even more ridiculous perspective. First of all, they covered up her statue. Secondly, they tore down her statue yesterday on Easter Sunday, bowing once more to the mob of insane losers who are attempting to enforce political correctness, their brand of ridiculousness, all over this country. Even though the vast majority of us believe that political correctness is an absurdity that must be combated. I've got a poll question up right now. It's rare that this ever happens. Do you agree with the Flyers' decision to strip her song and tear down her statue? 96% of you are saying no. 96%. Time for reasonable people to talk. Stop letting insane people rule.